ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Savai Ratnam Tutad Drishtva Atmaishvaryati Shayanam Tannadriya Tannadriya Tagnihotriyam Sabhilasha Sahai Hayaha Translation. Kartavirya-arjuna thought that Jamadagni was more powerful and wealthy than himself because of possessing a jewel in the form of the Kamadhenu. Therefore he and his own men, the Haihayas, were not very much appreciative of Jamadagni's reception. On the contrary, they wanted to possess that Kamadhenu which was useful for the execution of the Agnihotra sacrifice. Purport. Jamadagni was more powerful than Kartavirya-arjuna because of performing the Agnihotra yagya with clarified butter received from the Kamadhenu. Not everyone can be expected to possess such a cow. Nonetheless, an ordinary man may possess an ordinary cow, give protection to this animal, take sufficient milk from it, and engage the milk to produce butter and clarified ghee, especially for performing the Agnihotra Yajna. This is possible for everyone. Thus, we find that in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advises Gorakshya, the protection of cows. This is essential because if cows are cared for properly, they will surely supply sufficient milk. We have practical experience in America that in our various ISKCON farms, we are giving proper protection to the cows and receiving more than enough milk. In other farms, the cows do not deliver as much milk as in our farms because our cows know very well that we are not going to kill them. They are happy and they give ample milk. Therefore, this instruction given by Lord Krishna, Gorakshya, is extremely meaningful. The whole world must learn from Krishna how to live happily without scarcity simply by producing food grains. Anad bhavanti bhutani. And giving protection to the cows, Gorakshya. Krishi Gorakshya Vanija, Vaishya Karma Swabhavajam. Those who belong to the third level of human society, namely the mercantile people, must keep land for producing food grains and giving protection to cows. This is the injunction of Bhagavad Gita. In the matter of protecting the cows, the meat eaters will protest. But in answer to them, we may say that since Krishna gives stress to cow protection, those who are inclined to eat meat may eat the flesh of unimportant animals like hogs, dogs, goats and sheep, but they should not touch the life of the cows, for this is destructive to the spiritual advancement of human society. As you have just heard, Srila Prabhupada in this purport is elaborating on the importance of cow protection. The very concept of cow protection is foreign to the outlook of modern man, especially in the Western world. There's never been any idea in the culture of cow protection. It's considered foolishness to even think of it. There's a saying in English, sacred cow. It means something that people are attached to foolishly. Some political commentators have given the statement that Israel is America's sacred cow, because America is always protecting Israel. It doesn't really help America. That's their comment. I have nothing to comment about this at this point. But it's just an example of... The term sacred cow comes from the idea that this stupid Hindu idea that cow should be protected when it's good food. There's a whole, just like there's a whole Vedic culture, there's a whole Western anti-culture. So it's basic. The British, or the English in particular, pride themselves on being beef eaters. They think that's something very, very good. And in modern India also, there's not really any consciousness of that. It wasn't only India, the whole of the Buddhist world also, China, much of Southeast Asia, actually all of Southeast Asia, gradually Indonesia became Islamic, Malaya became Islamic, Vietnam became Christian, but otherwise the whole of Southeast Asia was either Hindu, Kampuchea was Hindu, or Buddhist. And they didn't, the Buddhist cult, because they in Buddhist so-called scriptures, they just adopted all the Hindu, all the Puranic statements, all about hell and different demigods. It's all the same culture practically. So they also adopted, actually Buddhism is supposed to be not eating any meat, but according to Buddhist law, L-O-R-E, Buddhist folklore, the Shakya Singh, or the Gautam Buddha, the last thing he did was to eat some pig's meat, and then he died from that. And so that's their excuse for eating meat. That will, although Ahimsa Paramo Dharma is their motto, that non-violence is the highest dharma, dhamma, as they say. But in the traditional Buddhist world, Sri Lanka, of course, also included. And actually all Afghanistan, all out that far, it was all Buddhist. When you say that India became Buddhist, that meant all from Afghanistan and all the way over to Indonesia. So, they're all, most people, their culture is one of meat eating, most people. Traditionally there are Buddhist vegetarians, certain sects and certain people, but they're mostly meat eaters. When I was staying in Thailand for some time, I was asking people, how come you're eating meat? That's violence. They said, no, we'd never kill any animal. We're Buddhists, we don't do that. But there's a Muslim community, so they do all the killing, and we only buy it, that's all. We'd never kill any animal. And 20 years ago or so, when I was staying in Thailand, at that time they didn't eat cow's meat, but nowadays they do. It's in Japan, they would never eat cow's meat, but there's no consciousness of that whatsoever. They just eat everything. They probably think it's low class to eat dogs, let's see. But it's lower class to eat cows. Cows. Or actually, Prabhupada gave provision for that. Prabhupada means he's taking from Shastra. That wait till the cow dies, then you eat the meat. Anyway, you'll get the same number of cows. But don't kill. So there's no consciousness of this. They had Recently, somewhere in Karnataka, and then again here in Tirupati, they had these Go Sammelans, in which they're calling for cow protection, but it's not going to happen actually unless the whole economic outlook has changed. Because the modern way of thinking is that everything is viewed as an economic object. What's its economic value? I sometimes used to look at India Today, and this India Today is the Indian version of Time magazine. It's copy of Time magazine. It's the style and the layout and the attitudes also. So they were quoting, this was 15 years ago or something, that these stupid people, they want to stop cow protection, but they want to stop cow slaughter when we're making so much money on foreign exchange. And they're calculating that India will soon become the largest exporter of beef. There's a lot of cows in India. So much. They have a few states where there's supposed to be no killing of cows. It goes on in those states, and then they just take, just like in Tamil Nadu, they take to Kerala. What's the difference? In Gujarat, they take over the border to Pakistan. Business is going on. So it's rampant. There's maybe thousands of cows killed every day in India, and no one's that much concerned. Indira Gandhi said that at that time, said there's no politician in India bold enough to try to explain to the people that there's nothing wrong with killing cows. But times have changed because people in India don't care. This is all, anyway, this political talk we could say, but this is all the gift of Mahatma Gandhi, who, because in the Indian independence movement, he was promoting this as a religious movement. So we can, he presented himself as a sadhu, and we're going to have Jai Hind, independent India. People were thinking, yeah, then we can be Hindus, and we can. One of the main things they wanted was that they'll stop cow slaughter. Because the British, they weren't interfering with Hindu religion in general, but they allowed cow slaughter because they're meat eaters, beef eaters themselves. And the Muslims had been ruling previously, most of India. So the people thought that, yeah, it's good, it's religious. We'll get rid of the British and then we'll have Hindustan and we'll stop the cow slaughter. And so they wanted to stop it. Mahatma Gandhi said, no, you have to allow it, because it's part of the Muslims' religion. You have to allow them to have their religion. So it's all his gift. Of course, it's a complex political issue, but it's not going to change unless the economic outlook changes. People see everything in terms of economics, and a cow is a different people see different things in different ways. So a businessman sees a cow as kam dhenu, means I can sell and I can get so much money. It's a good business. And that's normal nowadays. I was staying, this was again 7-8 years ago, I used to stay at a farmhouse outside Baroda from time to time. Baroda, Gujarat, pious Gujarati. So I used to stay there for writing. I'd come from time to time, and there was a farmhouse just opposite, and they had two bulls. So I came one time, I saw only one bull, and I asked, what happened to the other bull? Usko bech diya, we sold. It's just an economic object. We had the bull, we were using, working the land, we didn't need, so whatever, it became sick, so sold it. That's all. Actually, the Srila Prabhupada said that the cow is so valuable, it's not just the milk, but the the dung and the urine, that's so valuable for nourishing the land. And not only for nourishing the land, there are so many medicinal purposes. So many things for the mosquitoes in the evening can burn the cow dung, gives a pleasant smoke and the mosquitoes won't come. That the smarters, they used to complain in Bengal when there were smarter brahmanas. I never saw any. There was already an extinct species by the time I came. But they all became leaders of the Communist Party. Present leader of the Communist Party in Bengal is smarter brahmana stock. So they used to complain that they're bringing this mridanga into the temple. It's made of leather. It's impure. But actually the kind of leather that can be used for the Bengali mridanga, from a slaughtered cow it won't work. It'll have to be from a naturally dying cow. Otherwise it won't have the proper... I don't know what the word is. Texture. It has to be tightened and loosened and all this. Of course, the main reason for not killing cows is the same reason people ask her, why should you be vegetarian? And the main reason is because, the real reason is that because we want to please Krishna. And Krishna, we want to take only Krishna's remnants, become purified. As servants, we won't take that which is not taken by Krishna. So Krishna is not a meat eater. So he's a vegetarian, so we're followers of Krishna, so we're vegetarians. And Krishna's not only not a meat eater, but he's Gopal, so he's especially fond of the cows. So this is another of the forgotten programs of ISKCON, or it's not going on at the present time very much. It's in the books, so whoever wants to take it up can take it up. There's no bar. Anyone can attempt to do that. But the cow, apart from being worshipable, is an economic unit also. It's krishi goraksha vanijam vaishya karma svabhavajam. The vaishyas, they protect the cows, and it's their swabhava. They naturally gravitate towards that. Just like the brahmanas, they're naturally interested in intellectual, philosophical topics. Kshatriyas, they're interested in weapons. We find that one unknown brahmana came to the Swayamvar of Draupadi and outdid all the Kshatriyas. And no one knew who they were. They said, okay, thanks a lot, we'll take Draupadi and see you later. And they didn't know no one knew who they were. So Drupad sent her brother Drishtadyumna to find out who are these people. So he followed and went in the forest to their hut, and he was listening to what they were talking about, and they were talking about weapons and fights, and this is their evening talk. And he said, these aren't brahmanas. Even if brahmanas know how to fight, they talk about philosophical topics. But kshatriyas, they talk about fighting and weapons and stories of great kings. So he understood, because Drupad was, who are these people? So they wanted she should marry a king. So he was, okay, that's good. they're Kshatriyas. So it's a very strong swabhav, a very strong. It's not even a tendency. It's more than a tendency. It's like the innate nature. That's why they married within the caste, because the culture, we talk about Vedic culture, but it's not what would you say, monogamous culture. It's there's Brahminical culture and Kshatriya culture, Vaishya culture, and then there's the Shudras, who are not very cultured. But actually, even the Shudras are, and even less than Shudras, from what I've seen, they're more cult. They have so much culture that it's an interesting thing. I've seen that often the people who have the lowest culture, they're actually more cultured than the people of the higher castes, because the higher caste people got modern education, which destroys all culture. So they're often very... Well, the modern life, it's the whole culture is destroyed. The idea of democracy is, as Prabhupada said, demon crazy. So all their ideas are all wrong. In this here, particularly Srila Prabhupada is talking about cow protection. We talk a lot about Brahminical culture, I hope we do. And there's the idea that, you know, we're giving Brahmin initiation, devotees should be Brahmins, but actual Brahminical culture is inseparable from cow protection. We see here that Jamadagni, he was keeping a Kamadhenu because he's a Brahmin. He didn't make, when the kings came, the Kshatriyas came, he made an arrangement suitable for them, a very opulent arrangement. He didn't make it for himself. Just like Lord Shiva, you can go to him and what do you want? Him and his wife, between them, they'll give all kinds of things. But he's a Brahmana, he doesn't make any arrangement for himself. He's just sitting under a tree. It's a big tree, but he's sitting under a tree and chanting Ram Nam and meditating on Lord Sankarsha. So, Jamadagni is a Brahmana. He just kept the cow because she was useful for giving making the arrangements for yajna. Brahmanas are performing yajnas. So she was giving milk, first-class milk, and whatever else is required for the yajna. So brahmanas, traditionally they perform yajna, and that requires ghee, not dalda. So for that was required cows. In Shastra, when it's mentioned milk, unless it's otherwise qualified, it means cow's milk, not pig's milk, or donkey's milk, or buffalo's milk. It's cow's, not even human milk. It means cow's milk. So that's also necessary for nourishing the brain tissues, suitable for giving intelligence for understanding spiritual matters, to have good brain power. One can also get good brain power by eating fish, but that it's not the sattvic brain power. Then just like we find Bengalis, Japanese, many of them are intelligent because they eat fish, but it's not spiritual intelligence. That kind of intelligence nourishes the kind of philosophies that have come out of Bengal recently, which are not auspicious. So, milk, cow's milk. Now, cow's milk, that thing you get out of the packet which says cow's milk, that's not cow's milk. When Shastra talks about that, about milk, he's not talking about buffalo's milk, and he's not talking about cow's milk in a packet with cow's milk written on it. That's not cow's milk. It's got the name on it, but that's not It might come from a cow, some of it. But cows means that they are properly protected, properly nourished, not injected with hormones. So they will give the milk that is suitable for yajna and suitable for nourishing the brain substance. So Brahminical culture depends on cow protection, and if there is cow slaughter, then we can understand that there is no actual Brahminical culture. The cow protection, you say the Vaishyas protect, but they are also protected by the Kshatriyas. And as we see from this incident, the Brahmanas are more powerful than the Kshatriyas, even though they don't demonstrate that in terms of physical prowess, but actually they're more powerful. And if there are real Brahmins in society, then by their Brahma Teja, by their influence, Brahma Teja, that means the power he may have, but also by their influence, they're able to influence people. The Kshatriyas will become subservient to them by their qualities. Just like we see Srila Prabhupada. He was perfect. Of course, a Vaishnava is more than a Brahmana. But he was a perfect Brahmana in every sense, that by his influence, persons who would not submit to anyone else, they became submissive. They became, their pride became cut by one or two words, or by Prabhupada's looking at them, or sometimes just by his ignoring them, they would become just cut down. So a devotee, he becomes powerful. The Brahmanas, they become powerful by their austerities, by their following vows, by their satyavrata, by their dedication to truth. They become very powerful by the attitude. Just like Jamadagni had the attitude that he could enjoy everything that the world had to offer, but he wasn't taking it. He wasn't interested. By such an attitude, one can control the world as a sub-control. Krishna's the controller. Srila Prabhupada said that our movement can take over the world in 18 days, but we're not ready. There's so many people who have taken over the world and done so for their own sense gratification. There's a saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But that's not necessarily true, because Krishna has got absolute power and he's not corrupt. Yudhishthira Maharaj, he had the Kshatriya in the kingdom, they have absolute power. Someone comes, that's why Chanakya Pandit says, when you go, don't be careful when you deal with kings. They can give you immediately so many things, or they can chop off your head. So he had that power, but he wasn't corrupt. Power corrupts, and actually it brings out the inherent corruption, that's all. It's not that, or it gives the opportunity to manifest the desire to exploit others. In the modern age, they have the idea that everyone should have freedom and no one should have any domination over everyone else. Everyone should have the same rights as everyone else, because they're afraid that if anyone dominates anyone else, then they'll misuse that. In pre-war, up to before the Second World War, the fascist movement, Hitler especially, and then Stalin, they had in their states, they had absolute power, and how they misused it. And it seems to be, anyone gets absolute power in any state, and they misuse that in horrible. So people are very afraid of that. No one should submit to anyone else. That's also not possible. That even in the communist system, even in the democratic system, there's no equality. Now in India, they're trying, because there's so much disparity in society, they're trying to make they make caste reservations and all this kind of thing to try to bring the lower castes up. But it's a mess. You get unqualified people becoming doctors just because they happen to be from a lower caste. And the intelligent, even politically it gets votes, which is all the politicians want. But socially it's a disaster because all the intelligent people, they're all going to emigrate. And all the useless people are coming. The people who should be plowing in the fields, they're supposed to be the doctors and the lawyers what can you expect? So they're attempting artificially to make the society level with equal opportunity, but it's not equal. The higher caste people, they have less opportunity. So by favoring one group of people, they're oppressing another group. So Srila Prabhupada here is talking about cow protection. It's all part of a bigger package. I was discussing last year with Shivram Maharaj, who you may know. I think he came here. Shivram Maharaj? No? So he was... he's establishing a farm community in Hungary. And he was saying that it's all a pack, the Varnashram, it's all a big package. You have to put it, if you're going to bring people on the land, then you can't tell them, look, in 50 years we'll have a school for your children. And that's too late. They need it immediately. And Varnashram means it has to be cows, and then immediately there's the whole cow protection, and then the question comes that, well, we go on breeding and then we get more cows, and then what do we do? Because previously there were vast grazing lands that you could just take the cows and graze them in the forest. But now nowadays in India they're selling land by the square meter. It'll probably come down to the square centimeter soon. It'll be 1 crore per square centimeter on the mountains in Andhra Pradesh. And so every pebble is owned by someone, and there's no common land. So what do you do with excess? There was no problem previously. You have many cows, there's no problem. Bring them in the goshala at night, and then you take them out and graze them. But where are you going to graze them now? Because all the land is owned by someone, there's no forest or no common land. So it's all a big package, how to put it together. There's Prabhupada, his mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. He wants to establish Varnashram society, of which cow protection is one of the essential foundation stones. We can't have Brahminical culture with packeted dairy milk. We have to have cows who we protect. It's all a package together. There's a big challenge there. Now our movement's coming up, building temples, distributing books, this much, we kind of got a system now. It's become a normal thing that we, when those temples, Vrindavan Temple, ISKCON, opened in 1975, and then in 1978, just after Prabhupada passed away, Bombay ISKCON Temple. Now it's becoming like a normal thing. Every year in India at least, there's two or three big temples opened. We kind of got the formula for opening temples. Book distribution, it's going up. But this actual cow protection, which doesn't mean by opening a goshala and taking donations, that's not the system. That it's arguable that that works against actual cow protection, because then people think it's advertising, we need a donation for the to maintain the cows. That's advertising that cows are an economic liability. Whereas actually cow protection come, people will want to protect cows when they think that it's we godhan, it's a wealth to have cows. So we it's arguable that charitable goshalas work, they actually, ultimately they work against goraksha, against the principle of protecting cows. So there's a big challenge. Who wants to do that will get ample blessings from Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. And we're seeing, just like we're preaching, so many people are coming, devotees, and they say, well, they like to be devotees. I hate my job. I don't want to live in this kami society. What can I do? And we say, sorry, don't know. Just work 80 hours a week or whatever and churn your rounds somehow or other. It's not a very good program for becoming Krishna conscious. Time is needed to perform sadhana, and good association is needed. Also, I was saying about the schools. Nowadays in ISKCON we have schools, we don't have gurukuls, because maybe one reason is that if we have gurukuls and the children grow up, and then what do you do? You know that I'm a Brahmin. Well, we don't need Brahmins. We need people to go out and collect and bring money. We don't have any use for Brahmins. So, therefore we have schools. We don't have actual gurukuls. So, what's the solution? Well, we should start. Those who are bold enough and have faith, they should go to the land. And it's rough, and we don't know what we're doing, but someone has to start. Someone should do it. Some devotees will do it. Brahmacharis will do it, because the grihasthas, they won't take the risk. They don't want to risk their children. And mostly all our grihasthas and brahmacharis are attached to the city way of life. They can't imagine what it's like to live without electricity or all the modern comforts, and they'd rather travel 2 hours up, 2 hours down in a packed train so they can come home and turn on the fan than live in the country and have to use a hand fan. So people are attached to this city way of life. So anyway, some devotees are doing it. Bhakti Raghav Maharaj is starting project. He's done in Indonesia something. In Ahmedabad, land was donated when Srila Prabhupada was here. Prabhupada said to develop this village community. It hasn't been done all this time. The land is still there, and two devotees, the brahmacharis, they've gone there to start to develop that. That's a great challenge. Otherwise, we make devotees, also they become brahmacharis, then they want to get married, and then 50-50 chance they're going to maintain their Krishna consciousness in some kind of Krishna consciousness mixing up in the demoniac society. So, to help the devotees to survive in Krishna consciousness, these farm communities are needed. And also, we can't really preach what's in Prabhupada's books about the demoniac society unless we have an alternative. I mean, we were doing that when Prabhupada started the movement. We were saying this society is demoniac. It was new at that time. If we didn't have an alternative, that was understandable. But 40 years on, we should have something to show different. In America last year, one devotee was telling me that they go every year to the Rainbow Festival. It's a festival in America in which all... It's like the neo-hippies, those who... They understand modern society is a mess and we don't really want to be part of it. But they don't really have any alternative, but for 2 weeks or so in a year, they all go and pretend that the modern society doesn't exist, and they go to some place way out in the country without any electricity, and they all hang out together there and sing and dance and go around naked, many of them. So this devotee was telling me that we go there every year, and last year we brought back 12 devotees. So it's very good for making devotees. So I told him that you make these farm communities, you won't have to go anywhere. They'll come to you. These people who want an alternative, if we have it, they'll come. But we don't have it, so they're not coming. Prabhupada said that millions will join our farm communities. So now we have congregation 100, 200, 300, I think that's very big. Prabhupada said millions will join if we show there's a better way of life. Prabhupada was practical Paramahamsa. When he came to Hyderabad, one journalist, he just arrived, Prabhupada asked, the journalist asked Prabhupada, are you a Dvaitvadi or an Advaitvadi? Prabhupada didn't even know. He said, this is a stupid question. You think that's a... I didn't say that, but that was the implication. I mean, that's what... You know, that's the first thing you ask a Swami in South India. Nowadays, it's, you know, which number God are you? It's, all the Swami, instead of being Dvaitvadis or Advaitavadis, they all became God nowadays. So, well, Prabhupada, he said, that's not there. The real thing is, where's the rain? There's no rain. There hadn't been any rain in Hyderabad for 2 years. There was a drought. So Prabhupada quoted, Anad Bhavanti Bhutani, what's the next word? Parjanya, clouds, rain. Parjanya Dana Sambhavaha. Yagya Bhavati Parjanya, Yagya Karma Samadbhava. People are impious, there's no yagya, so there's no rain. So Prabhupada said, we've come here to do Sankirtan Yajna. Within 2 days there was sufficient rain. Prabhupada said that you send a devotee. In Hyderabad also, the devotee, that land was donated for the farm. That was another, anyway. They were asking about, well, we have to dig some wells. Prabhupada said, no need, you perform Sankirtan, there'll be rain. Hare Krishna. It's time for darshan. Some thoughts. Who will be bold to do that? To make these farm projects. This Purusha Triswami in Brazil, he's made farm community like this. It's mostly, it's self-sufficient, but there's, I think they generate electricity by some alternative means, something like, oh, that they have banana packing. They dry bananas and sell it. So it's not totally self-sufficient, all-inclusive community. But they've made a good start. And he says that I met him in Europe last summer. He told me that he goes and preaches in the universities and meets big people in the government. And he said, right from the beginning, they're listening. They respect us. You've got something practical to offer. Hare Krishna.